third block of content. It's hard to call it just a session because it's really been a continuum, right? And then with Corina, the content will continue even further. Right now, I'm basically focusing a lot on giving you very foundational type of content and information. And Corina will then take a lot of those concepts and will actually start using them in an actual application. Like in her second session, the last session of the day, she will actually build a prototype end-to-end in Expression Blend using a lot of these principles that we've been learning. So we're trying to take you guys from foundation to execution. So let's talk about this topic called Think, and I will probably assign 20, 30 minutes to this particular topic. Thinking is important for all of us. So one of the things that happens when we create a Windows Phone application, and a lot of that is due to the fact that the tools, things like Visual Studio and Expression Blend, we keep hearing that from many developers. They are considered really good tools. They really help you do the job and get you up to speed and producing applications quickly, right? One could argue that in a few weekends, you could put together an application. However, sometimes that's not necessarily the best approach to go straight to coding. If we're developers and we go directly to Visual Studio, we have an idea, we go to Visual Studio and start coding, that's probably not necessarily the best approach. Also, if we're designers and we have an idea and we go straight to Photoshop and start mocking up the user interface, that's also not necessarily the best process to design an application. So I want to share with you a few ideas on how we can generate creative concepts for applications, and then how you can utilize those to create a mock-up or a prototype of your application. I will be focusing mostly on design-driven process and ideation techniques. So let's talk a little bit about design-driven process. This is a quote that I heard from someone, I can't remember from who, that's why it's not quoted, but it's very true. When someone asks you whether they should be investing in design in your application or user experience, the answer is, you know, there is no alternative to no design. There will always be design. It's just going to be good or bad. So a lot of people think that if they do not invest in design, then they don't have to worry about design because design is not there. But design is always there. It's more of a matter whether it's good or bad design. And this takes us to talk about this, you know, kind of typical conversation, especially in the last few years, of the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain, and how in this new era of creating experiences, digital experiences for phones, for tablets, for the TV, and many other devices and widgets that we all use, how important it is to have a good balance between these two types of approach of solving a particular project. If you are in a team, if you have a team and you manage a group of people or you're part of a larger team, it is very important that your team has a balance between people that are more logical and sequential and logical about their process and people that might be more like spontaneous and organic and maybe less rational in some cases, right? It's good to have that type of balance, because that's the best way today to create experiences that truly use the best of technology. We strongly think that the times where software was exclusively a rational discipline are gone. I think today, if you want to create software that really impacts people, you have to include both types of understanding. This is a curve that allows us to explain how valuable it is to have a design-driven process to create an application, in this case, a Windows Phone application. Now, when I use the word design, I do not mean visual design, or I don't mean like doing things pretty necessarily. Design is a bigger concept, as we know, and it's a concept that developers have been doing for many years. When you guys go and create software, you're designing software. And that's part of design. When designers, whether you're a visual designer, an interaction designer, you guys are doing design, it's in the broader sense. So a design-driven process means that at the beginning of your project, you allow yourself or your team to invest time in defining what you want to do, exploring some of those ideas, defining the concept, and refining the concept. And just after that is done, then you start actual production. I'm sure we've all been through the case where we've been programming or coding for 3 months, and then we show some of those early features to users, and turns out that users don't like those features, or they just don't understand how those features work. There are usability problems. There are a lot of these things. And a lot of that is because in some of those cases, the curve has been inverted. We start with low investment on conceptualizing our application, and so the risk of failure increments later on. Here, by doing this, we're bringing all the potential risks of designing an application to the beginning of the project. It is much less expensive when you face risks in a concept stage, in an exploration stage, than when you face risks in a production stage. And these are, for example, 3 filters that we use in the design studio all the time to measure how much some of these features are worth investing or not. We have a business, a technical, and an experience filter. And so for the business filter, we ask not only at the application level, but at the specific little feature level, how viable is this feature from a business point of view? Does it make sense? Do we have the resources to make it happen? From a technical point of view, is it feasible? Can we actually implement it in the time that we have? Do we have the required services? Do we have to license third-party controls? In Windows Phone, there's that possibility. And the third one, which a lot of times we forget about, right? But is it desirable? Is this feature desirable enough? Will we be able to show this feature to a user and the user will go crazy about it and we'll go like, yeah, I want it, right? So a lot of times, if you realize that a feature is kind of weak on one of those filters, maybe it's not super viable or maybe it's not super desirable, chances are that that feature won't necessarily be super successful initially. That might be one of the features you might want to cut from V1. Of course, in V2, you will be looking into enhancing that. But these are like 3 filters that you can use to pass all your features through to decide which ones you want to use. This is also the process that we use in the studio, which again talks about taking the process from think to make. We first think, explore, ideate, come up with ideas and explore them. And then those ideas start refining themselves until we get to the make stage. In the design studio, we have different teams. We have a design team that is crafting the next version of Phone, and they are doing a lot of research and understanding how the user will be using a particular feature. They're very talented designers in terms of visual design. There's motion design as well. And they basically design the experience as a whole. Then we also have, as I mentioned, a team of motion designers. So motion designers are devoted exclusively to crafting the motion experience, the animation experience of the phone. And they influence the rest of the team, and the team influences them back as well. Then we have a program management team, and the program management team helps basically come up with some of the main features, agree on the specifications for the features, and that gives unity to the entire process. And then we have a very important team called the design integration team. And the design integration team are designers that have are using left and right side of their brains, to say it somehow. They can code, they understand SAML and C#, and they are also really good designers. This group of integrators take a lot of the designs that the designers have created, the interaction designers, and they transform it into SAML. And this is the code that ends up being put then in the hands of the engineering team. So when the engineering team gets the user interface, the motion, all this, the user experience of the phone, it's already ready to ship from a design point of view. So the engineers don't necessarily have to recreate that. So if you work for a large team, that would be an interesting approach to take. Now, of course, with Microsoft, we have nearly 2,000 people working on Windows Phone. So it's a huge organization, and we require of this very specific process to be successful. in many cases, of course, we work in smaller teams, right? Like maybe some of you work on your own or in smaller teams, and so an agile type of method of creating applications will work much better. And that, at the end, it's the same thing. Someone will eventually have to do that integration work between design and development, even if it's yourself. Sometimes some of you work on your own, you are all three roles in a way. So let's talk about ideation techniques. And I always like to start with this phrase, which I'm sure we have all heard this phrase before, right? But every block of stone has a statue inside it, and it's a task of the sculptor to discover it. So when it comes to generating ideas for apps, it's the same thing. In this group of people that we have here on in this room, if you could merge a lot of the thoughts that you guys have, I can assure you would have an unlimited number of cool ideas for apps. And I'll give you an ideation technique that you guys can use with your teams. Now, this is the ideation process. We divide it in three different stages. We have the brainstorming stage, exploration, and consolidation. Brainstorming is all about giving full freedom to yourself and to others to think literally crazy. It's just about thinking crazy and generating a lot of ideas. This is the time where you want to have tons of little ideas. Then the exploration stage is a stage where you learn and understand some of those ideas. So notice that the density of ideas in the center is much less, because now you're starting to be selective, but you allow yourself to explore some of these ideas. And then in the consolidation stage, it's all about making decisions. It's the opposite of full freedom. In making decisions, you have to start having mechanism and techniques for working with your team to decide which of these things we're actually going to be including in our application. So let's talk about brainstorming techniques. What's the output of this stage? Well, the output are ideas, stories, even emotions in many cases. So it's very abstract in many cases, these ideas. What are some of the risks? Really, the only big risk is restricting yourself or others in coming up with all sorts of ideas. What type of skills are needed to succeed in this stage? Well, the ones we have there, things like craziness and even delusion, imagination, poetry, like all these crazy things that will eventually help you come up with interesting concepts. Now, within brainstorming, we have three stages. We generate ideas, we relate ideas to each other, and then we present our ideas. This is the first ideation technique that I could share with you. It's called subjects, verbs, and objects, or subject, verb, and object. The exercise here is that you have your team, and you have some post-it notes, and so you ask everyone in your team to take three pieces of paper, and on each of them, they will write one subject, one verb, and one object. Examples of subjects. Subjects, for example, could be, you know, person, mother, girlfriend, priest, I don't know, ambassador, you know, a person, a subject. Then verb, it could be anything like run, play, scream, fight, lose, anything. Then the third one is an object. So object could be something like, I don't know, coins, credit card, bottle of water, chair, da-da-da. So you come up with those three. Now, before this, you will have established context. What's the context that we are aiming for? So imagine that we, right now, I told you guys, we have to design an application for dining, like a dining companion. So we're going out with friends or family to eat at a place, and so it's a dining companion. It's a very broad application right now, right? It doesn't tell us specifically what it will do, but that's what we can start defining. So when this exercise is done, and let me see if I have the... There. So like we did this exercise in a group, with a group in Barcelona. Notice Messi, the player, right? So we asked them, we're creating a dining companion, a restaurant companion. Write some personas, some subjects. And again, someone wrote Messi, dictator. I don't know why I would think of a dictator in a restaurant, but someone thought about that. Cook, vegetarian girlfriend, client, lover, chef. And there are like all sorts of words. Benedict 16. Again, why would anyone think of something like that? So baby, but you know, our friends in Spain. Then here are some verbs, right? And so with verbs, there were all sorts of verbs. And of course, these ones are in Spanish. But with things like eat or pay or other things that happen in a restaurant, right? Eat, scream, enjoy, scare. I don't know why scare in a restaurant, but I guess that could happen if you find a fly in your plate, right? You could be scared or something, or you see a cockroach. I don't know. But there are steal, like someone saw steal, talk, play again, take away, ta-da. So when you do this exercise with a bunch of people, you start coming up with words, verbs, objects that I would have never thought of. When I started doing this exercise with these guys, there were about 100 people in the group, I just didn't know what they were going to come up with. And at the end, some really interesting ideas came out of this. So let me show you some of that. So these were like some of the subjects that people wrote. Again, Messi, the player, grandparents, kids, cook, waiter. And so out of that, the next part of the exercise, after that is done, and you have three sets of words, subjects, verbs, and objects, then you ask a smaller group of people. You group people in groups of two or three, and you ask them to pick one of each word, right? And so some people would pick something like Messi, food and play, Messi the player, Messi food play, or grandparents food play, or kids food and play. And so when you start looking at this, you start identifying certain opportunities. For example, kids food play, that's something that I would have never thought on my own, but the fact that a lot of people came up with those words, now it's giving me an idea for a problem that could happen in a restaurant, right? Kids play with food. That's something I would have not thought of. If I had thought of a dining companion, I would have probably gone to the typical, you know, connecting to Foursquare or connecting to Yelp or, you know, the typical thing. But how can we solve the problem or an application that helps kids not play with food or helps parents have their kids not play with food? And so we can start developing that idea in different ways. These are some ideas, some ways that you can do that. Like one technique is called predicting the future. And in that one, what you do is with your group of three people, you chose your three words, like kids play with food. How can we solve that problem? So imagine that you move forward in time 6 months or 1 year, nothing more than that, when your application has been released, and write down some quotes from your customers that would be praising your application and why they like your application. So a mother would say, well, my children used to play with food a lot, but now instead they've learned a lot about cultural aspects in our country. So I don't know, that maybe starts giving you ideas that maybe a way for kids not to play with food will be to showing them cultural information, which I'm sure it won't work, but you start getting some more ideas. There are a few others that are exercises that fall into kind of the ridiculous category. And so, for example, the impossible technique. So think of, so we've been saying that I'm a parent and I bring two kids and they play with food. That's a problem, right? But what would be an impossible scenario? Imagine that I have 100 children. I'm a parent and I have 100 kids. That's a big problem, right? And so I take them to the restaurant and they will play with food. That's an impossible scenario. But what would you do as a parent if you had 100 children? Well, you would probably need a mechanism beyond your memory to learn and remember the names of all of them. Maybe you even need a photo from all of them to recognize them. You will have to learn ways to group them by age difference or by liking. Some of them might be old enough to be vegetarian, so some of them will be vegetarian, et cetera, et cetera. So you will start trying to control and to give love to all your children, to 100. Now, that's an impossible scenario. No one will have 100 children, possibly, that I know of. But what could happen is that you go to a restaurant and you might have 100 children from different parents, of course. And so by allowing yourself to think as a parent, as the father or the mother of 100 children, you can now transport some of those needs to the needs of a restaurant for having 100 children in the restaurant. So while no one will have 100 children, you might have 100 children in the restaurant. So what if our application to solve the problem of children play with food could become something like I don't know, like a mini social network in the restaurant to help children socialize or help their parents, you know, put together games while they're waiting for food or something like that. And then, you know, there are all sorts of ideas. Alternate worlds. What would be an alternate world? What happens, you know, what would happen, for example, if this restaurant was in the moon? Literally. I know it sounds crazy, but what happens if you, if a kid would throw a meatball to someone else in the moon? It would just continue to fly, right? So now let's transport that back here to Earth. And how do we leverage that idea of a meatball floating in the moon? Well, what if you create an application or a game for children where they can actually play with digital food? They can smash it, they can throw it, they can do all that. And so that keeps them entertained right there. Perhaps even if you connect with other children, maybe they can even throw things to each other across different devices. But again, that idea would have never showed up in our minds if we had not exposed ourselves to another environment like the moon. So again, these are like fun techniques that you can do with groups. It's really fun. In others' shoes, this is another one where people laugh a lot, and it's a really fun activity. But in others' shoes, it's a typical thing that they say, okay, imagine that you were the waiter or the waitress, right? And what you would do. That's very straightforward. But take it to the next level. Imagine that you go to an Italian restaurant, and imagine that you are the spaghetti plate, right? And I know that sounds weird, but if you're a spaghetti plate, how did you get to the restaurant? Well, you, the pasta got in, tomato sauce got separately, you were stored, so there's a storage place, there must be a storage place, right? In, a fridge in the restaurant. The cook took you out, and they he prepared you. He put you in a counter, the waiter took you to the table, you got eaten, etc., etc., right? And so by allowing yourself to explore the experience of a restaurant, because remember we said it's the restaurant experience, the dining experience in the shape of a spaghetti plate, now you've immersed yourself into what happens in the kitchen and what happens in your way from the kitchen to the table. And so you're exposing yourself to other types of scenarios that you would have not discovered if we would have only thought of, yeah, restaurant application, I'll just use the Foursquare API. I will just use the Yelp API, because that's kind of the typical approach we usually use to create apps. We think of there's the availability of an API. Let's create an app for that API, right? So this kind of forces you to think outside of the box. Now, having all these ideas is great. Many of them are crazy. But at some point, you have to start deciding which ones actually have potential and which ones not. And so this process of relating ideas to each other starts helping you achieve that. So you start identifying some of these different ideas that these smaller teams came up with, and you start identifying, hey, so you thought of a gaming scenario, like smashing food in a game, and you thought of another idea, and they kind of relate each other, so let's bring them together. Now, the third stage is presenting your ideas. And presenting your ideas, there is a technique for presentation called pecha kucha. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. It means chit-chat in Japanese. And the cool thing about this presentation method is that you only have 20 slides. You can only use 20 slides. And you have 20 seconds per slide. So it's a very restrictive type of presentation method on purpose. And the good thing about this type of presentation method in a brainstorming session is that it forces you to leave out things that are, just don't make sense, and things that are just like completely, like, you know, undoable, or, you know, it forces you to talk only about the things that will be relevant to the team. Now, remember, at this point, we've had people write their words, pick three words, and divide in smaller teams, come up with some ideas using impossible scenarios, alternate worlds, in other shoes. And now here they come and they present those ideas. So again, this forces people to be concise. You can find more information about this particular method. There's like a huge organization around Pecha Kucha, and they have a sample slides and presentations available for people. So talking now about exploration, and this is where we're going to jump into the golf application that I believe I mentioned on the first block of content. How do we do some of this exploration? And well, exploration can be done by selecting some of your ideas and then taking a look at them and exploring them by using things like sketches, storyboards. Could be prototypes as well. And prototypes can be of different fidelity. They can go from being very sketchy, maybe even paper prototypes, where you can start asking people for feedback, and they can end up being very well refined and digital prototypes using something like Expression Blend. And that's what we're going to have Karina teach us more, how to create an actual digital prototype using Expression Blend for a phone app. So let me jump into this other slide deck here. And let's take a look at this app. This is what we define or call as the user journey. And this is the experience, right? Thinking of the experience and how we're going to take the user to experience the fun that it is to play golf. So like we said at the beginning you have to allow yourself to think big. It's always good to make this with a group of people. Even if you work on your own, on the brainstorming session, invite some of your friends or your family, ask them for feedback. It's always very, very helpful, and you will always find really interesting ideas when you involve a lot of other people. Then once you start exploring, one of the things that you might want to start doing is to start portraying the flow of that experience. And the flow of that experience can start manifesting in user interface. It doesn't have to be precise. You don't exactly have to know what buttons and which buttons will have to go here and there. But you can start laying this out. Now, there are different ways to do application flow charts. This is one of them that we kind of like in the studio because it kind of reminds us to a metro map, subway map. But you can start seeing here how the application would flow into some of the different components and screens. Another way of doing this, actually I have a... let me see. I think it's this one. Another approach that you can use to do something like this, we start with a Word file, something like this. I wouldn't even call this specs. This is mostly like a sitemap in the web world. This is more like the sections or the big functionalities that we would have in our application. Notice that we have basically Meal Nirvana, which in this case would be kind of a restaurant application. And then we have four sections, restaurants, expenses, reports, and settings. So you start kind of grouping things out and using a lot of like bullet points to start creating a structure. And then you can start bringing that over to a tool like I love to use Expression Design, which is just like Illustrator. Think of it like Illustrator. And you start laying out all those different elements, and I don't think you can see the full thing, but you can start seeing how you have the main app hub or the main welcome control for your application, and then you will have four secondary sections for that application. Now notice that at this point we still don't know whether they are panoramas or pivots. We still don't know, but we're allowing ourselves to explore what will eventually be better for some of this. So for instance, here on the restaurants, this is the structure that I'm establishing. I will have search results, a results map from like a Bing map control, and then a list of favorites. And then when I tap anything in these three categories, I will be taken to restaurant details. Now, in a second iteration, this actually became much more simple, and we just simplified this all, and we now only have search results and favorites, because results map will be available on both. But you start talking to your team, and you start coming up with these, with refining some of these ideas to make them more doable. Now, this is kind of a third pass on the application flow, and again, this is basically the same thing as... Wait, what we were seeing, where's my slide? Here, I don't know why it went away. This one, it's the same thing. It's just expressed in a different way. I think this one looks cooler. It's probably a little bit harder to do initially, but this is another way. So now here, what we're starting to do is we're starting to take some decisions of what each of these groups or of functions will eventually become. So for example, restaurants, right? We said that restaurants would have search and favorites. So does that make sense for a panorama? Maybe not. I think a pivot is better. What's the reasoning for that? A panorama is great as a magazine cover. a magazine cover, in this case for restaurants, would probably expose something like the restaurant of the day or the recommended restaurants for the week or something like that. It would bubble up from your application only little snippets of content and information. But in this case, I only want something very, very simple. I want search and search results. So I want to be able to search for a Thai food restaurant, and I want a list of favorites. And pivots are great to show information that comes from the same database. So in this case, it's both restaurants, but the pivot presents it in different ways. We will see more about pivot in the Golf application. But for now, basically, in this third stage, you can start allowing yourself to define what controls this will be. In this case, you can see I'm using a lot of pivots, but I will actually eventually start migrating a lot of these to panoramas. And actually, I believe I have a panorama idea here. One of the things that I've found is that if you start by designing your panorama first, that will eventually restrict you from having more freedom in your application. Panoramas are very attractive because they're cool and they look amazing. But if you start designing the panorama, it's like if you were starting to design the cover of the magazine before having the content for the magazine. And that's just not the way it works in the publishing business, right? In the publishing business, there are first like agreements and deals that are set to write articles and content. And then the content that will be exposed in the magazine will be chosen. So design recommendation I would give you guys is to start first by defining everything except for your main panorama. Define your pivots, define your pages, or even interior panoramas for your application. And then at the end, come up with that magazine cover that you want to use as your welcome screen. But again, this basically, it's the same thing. This just looks cooler. And if you have a designer in-house, eventually you can get to this point. But you don't have to have this level of fidelity at the beginning. You can be very simple, like the one that I was using before. What we're talking about here is basically information architecture. This is another way of expressing the same thing. Now, notice here it's kind of a more advanced level of detail. Now we're actually using wireframes. It's not the final design, but now we can actually start telling that there will be some buttons and some checkboxes and some text boxes as well. And so we can start telling this same flow that we have here. We can start telling the same flow, but now in much more detail. Oops, again. Now, the same thing that we were describing before, when you start doing this, it's recommended you guys just use like sketches, hand-drawn sketches. If you don't feel comfortable drawing, some people prefer not to draw by hand, you could just do some simple wireframing in tools like Visio or even PowerPoint, which might be a sacrilege to say to designers, but some people actually can use PowerPoint or something like that to illustrate the flow of an application. Later on, you will have time to add the visual polish, but it's not critical at the beginning. Again, a lot of people like to drill deeply into how things will look like at the end, and sometimes it's better to leave that to the end. So let's start taking a look at this application for golf and see how we can apply all those concepts that we've been reviewing in the morning for Metro Design Language. How can we bring that into this application? Remember, right now we're exploring some of these ideas. So first, it is important that you start thinking about your tiles. Yeah, we basically have two tiles that you guys have to think of. This one, which is the access tile for your application, it's a smaller compared to this one, which is the tile, the actual application tile. And this can be a live tile if you choose to do so. Incorporating your branding into this tile is, of course, super important. And it's actually a good idea to start exploring tiles early enough in the process, because that ends up giving you a lot of good ideas for your actual application. This is a chart that someone put together in the team, Live Tile Anatomy. And here you actually, again, you will get all these materials, but you can see all the positioning for the different elements, and especially you can see how the tiles are made out of different elements. It's the image, it's the notification, etc., etc. This is the welcome screen. This is what we're thinking will be the welcome screen for the golf application. This is just a Photoshop comp. Here you can see the splash screen. This is a control that comes out of the box. You guys probably remember we saw this one a couple hours ago. It's called the weight cursor. I don't know what's called cursor because it doesn't really move, but it's a weight loader. Notice the use of the images. We already talked about this. Foreground and background is enhanced by blurring it out. It gives that feeling of depth. We probably use Photoshop. You can see a little bit of the clone or mirroring tool there in Photoshop. This is the welcome menu in the application. Very generous touch regions for these different options. So these options are not stacked right next to each other. There's good spacing in between them. Here comes a pivot. So we've talked a lot about panoramas and just a little bit about pivots. This is a great example of a pivot. So pivot is a control that is really good at displaying information that comes from the same database, but it filters it out in different ways. So this pivot is showing information from golf courses, but here it's presented by the recent, let me see if this works now. Oh yeah, these are now the recent golf courses. These are nearby courses, and these are all the courses. Now, even though all this information comes from the same database, golf courses, it's presented in different ways. This is just a list. Here, we're talking about nearby, so location is important when you start talking about something that's nearby, right? So it makes sense that we have a map and that we are mapping or tagging these different golf courses to the map. As we saw before in the map control, if we tap here, we would be taken to a full screen map. And then on all the way on the right, you can see how, you know, it's all the golf courses. So we could have 300 courses. So we implement a quick jump list, which are these A, B. If you tap those letters, you will get an index of all the letters, and you can type the letter P, and then that will take you to all the, to all those courses. Now, another point here is the pivot lookup, which is this text up here. And the pivot lookup, you can see it basically doesn't change. It's the thing that defines the pivot. Now, here's another design idea for you guys when you create a pivot. If you find it easy to describe your entire pivot experience, oops, by writing this pivot lookup, by describing your entire pivot experience. See, I'm not having it easy to describe this. But if you want to describe your entire pivot with a simple phrase and you find that easy, then chances are your pivot is well designed. If you have a pivot control and you're finding it hard to come up with the pivot lookup up there, then chances are that something in your pivot might be off, perhaps in terms of information architecture. You're displaying information that doesn't really belong there. List view templates, we talked a little bit about this before, which we use here a lot. This is the course details screen. Notice here the use of very clean image, again, as we've seen all along. The use of typography. The use of typography to convey structured information. And also down here, right, you can see phone, directions, website, etc. Now, one comment that I got at some point for in this slide is, hey, why is the phone number smaller than the word phone? I cannot read the phone number very well. Why didn't you guys make it bigger? And the reason is that if you think about it today, I don't think I even know the phone number of my friends anymore. Because in the phone, it's just their, you know, it's their name or it's their photo, and I tap and then a call, I make a call, right? So the phone number has, actual phone number has become less relevant. It's still displayed, but in this case, what we're trying to highlight there for the user, the word phone indicates place of phone call. It's more important than the actual phone number, which is kind of an interesting thing. Same thing for directions. It's not, I don't need to necessarily show the address right there for my friend. If I hit directions, I will be taken to the map and I can go there. Now, of course, if you want to see the directions, you can always go to the contacts list, but it's not critical here. Notice this button down here in this kind of application bar. And this application bar actually doesn't look like an application bar because it doesn't have the ellipsis, although maybe it doesn't have options inside of it. It can be used like that with a single button as long as it has this type of button, the icon button. This is another pivot. Now, this pivot is not showing golf courses. It's showing golf players. So same database, golf players. And here they are arranged by all your friends, groups, and all golf players. So your friends, you will see them here with some information. Groups, you can see some kind of very elegant way of displaying some of the different golf players still in a grid, very clean. And then all, and in that case, you know, the word Alabama, for example, this button helps us as a quick jump list, the same mechanism we used before alphabetically, but here it's used by state. We could have chosen to use alphabetical as well. Now, one interesting thing about this screen is these elements here, these four elements, which are a custom control. This is a custom control. This doesn't come out of the box with Silverlight. What this control will do is that when we tap different players, they will be placed in there, in that particular, in these boxes. And those are the players that you're going to go out to the field with. Now, even though this control is a custom control, it still looks very Metro. And it looks Metro because it's aligned. It's respecting the 24-pixel margin that we have here on the left. It uses the same color as the rest of the application. It's using Sego. Perhaps that might be Sego semi-light or light. But everything is aligned, and it just looks totally Metro. This is the quick jump list that I was describing before. This is the context menu. So if I tap and hold over that player, I will get the context menu. And that will help you provide the user with basically functionalities that affect that particular item. This is the final confirmation screen when you're about to go and play. One typical question we get here also is, why is this button not in an app bar? Why is it just floating there on its own? And the reality is that an app bar makes a lot of sense when you have more than one screen to accommodate functionality there. Although, in this particular case, you could have also used a single app bar with a single button because the call to action is very simple. There is only, if you take a look at the entire screen, there is only one button that's clickable to start the round. If you wanted to go back, then you would use the back button in the hardware. This is another custom control, this one over here. So this is where you would keep track of the hits, right, as a golf player. Now, the first idea of the designer was to, hey, if I need to type in a number, maybe I'll show up the entire keyboard, right? But the keyboards have characters, and they have numbers, they have symbols, and they have many things that we don't really need for this particular experience. The other idea was like, hey, why don't we just show the phone keyboard? But the phone keyboard also has like a star sign, a hash tag, things like that. We don't really need those things. So the best solution was to come up with a custom control where you would have the plus and the minus sign buttons that would allow the number to go up and down. And that just ended up being much easier for the experience versus having to type in a particular number. Notice also the use of the infographic up there, how it's floating on top of the background. More infographics here, floating on top of the background. Some default controls. Very specific call to action here, accept or cancel. Here's another design recommendation. You have a text box. If you tap on it, all these other elements will be pushed up and outside of the screen. And so one of design recommendation for you guys is if you require an object for the user to be able to type this type of text, you should be careful that that object is not pushed away. A way to do that is by putting them much closer to the text box or simply making the text box a little shorter if that is possible. And this is about orientation. And we were talking to someone about orientation during one of the breaks. Orientation, sometimes it's taken as something that it's kind of simple, right? We just rotate. But it's actually, there's a lot of thought into it. Sometimes there's like keywords. We were just learning about this keyword form factor, which can definitely influence whether you want to rotate your screen or not. In this case, the designer took a very interesting decision that I thought was kind of smart. The usual expectation from a user interface is that if you have an application and you rotate the application, all these elements should reaccommodate to look landscape, right? But the designer here in this particular case, he thought, okay, what is the best use for landscape mode? So instead of just saying, okay, let's reaccommodate or let's reorganize, relay out all these elements so they look nice on landscape, he asked himself, what's a better use for landscape? And so he came up and he realized, looking at, you know, at the way he plays golf, that there is this thing called the scorecard, which when you play golf with your friends, you always have a scorecard. And scorecards tend to be horizontal because of the different holes, right? You go from hole 1 to maybe hole 18 or 9, depending on the course. And you have your names, and you keep track of each of the holes. And so the designer came up with this idea of saying, what if every time that we rotate this application, instead of showing the same information, we show something that makes very much sense on landscape mode? And in many cases, that can be even a better way to approach orientation. But again, it just will vary so much, also depending on the devices that you're targeting, as we were learning during one of the breaks. It's all important. So let me play to you guys, as part of this exploration stage, a video that the designer put together to show how this application would look like in After Effects. This is After Effects. This is not the actual application. Now, this is a very well-polished application created by a motion designer. We don't necessarily have to do our exploration using After Effects. If we have it and we know how to use it, of course. But you could use other things like Expression Blend. And again, Karina will teach us more about that. But you could even use, again, I'll say it, PowerPoint. Sorry, designers. But you could definitely use PowerPoint or any other mechanism that allows you to convey ideas and to communicate what you're looking for. So let's play this video and take a look at all these different things that we talked about in action. We're about to tap the tile. Notice the animation on top that will occur for transition, that kind of swing. Get started, and we're taken. That was actually a trick. If someone is interested, and I'll tell you in the break. Here we're taken to a pivot control, the first pivot, the nearby courses. As we said, pivot is great control to display information from the same database, but sorted out or filtered out in different ways. Now we go back to recent, the recent pivot item, and we're going to select one of our items. Did you notice that tilt effect? That tilt effect is the one that we've been talking about for instantaneous response from elements. Now here we have our screen where we have our custom control and a list box. List boxes can be customized any way you want. We have groups. This is the second pivot that we reviewed, golf players. And here as well, basically this is the list of all the players. That's a quick jump list. I would be able to jump somewhere else. And then we'll go back to our friends, and we're going to start picking some friends that we're going to go out and play with. So we tap one of the players, and it gets added to the list. And we should invite Jack Nicklaus. Why not? And then up there, we get a message from Tiger Woods saying he had a little car trouble, but he's joining us. So we'll add him. Now we have our three friends and ourselves. And now we're going to go, and perhaps Ricky Barnes is not playing anymore, so we can tap and hold, context menu, delete. You can, of course, customize all those options. And now we're ready to start playing. So we'll go start round. We can see the screen. Again, this is the custom control that I was talking about. Notice the motion that will occur there when we go up. There's even a little bit of vertical motion to convey, perhaps reminding us a little bit of numbers or some of these like boards in airports where the numbers kind of go up and down. A lot of these controls, which are just out of the box. Finish round, and here's the orientation concept that we were talking about. So every time that the phone is rotated, you get this scorecard, which is read-only. This is not editable. But again, it's kind of interesting when you think of orientation. It will vary so much, really, depending on your experience. So I think I need to finish at... Actually, I think I passed like 10 minutes. So let's stop it. As we've been doing throughout the breaks, happy to take questions. Next two sessions will be amazing with Karina, because she's going to now take us to really how you do this in Expression Blend. very practical, also super design oriented. Let's take 10 minutes so that we're still in touch. So let's get back at 3:05-ish, 3:07. Thank you.